You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, President-elect Biden wants to hold a global meeting of democracies when he's in office, but our next guest says Biden needs to hold a meeting on democracy here at home first. Now, the U.S. House of Representatives is expected to consider an impeachment measure against President Donald Trump tomorrow morning. The House is poised to do that if Vice President Mike Pence doesn't invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump, which looks unlikely at this point. This all comes after last week's violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump extremists, an event that Democrats say the president incited. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you want to see lawmakers responding to that insurrection? Do you think it's necessary, a good idea to impeach the president to set a precedent? Do you think it'd be wiser to ride out the rest of his term, which ends next week? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lara Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the author of a number of books, including her most recent Amateur Hour, Presidential Character and the Question of Leadership. Lara, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Well, I mentioned that some Democrats had accused the president of provoking this insurrection, some Republicans too, and we're seeing news. The first, I believe, Republican member of the House, Representative Katko from New York, a Republican, saying that he would support impeachment. He would vote to impeach. Can you talk about the move toward impeachment and what the momentum looks like right now?
Well, so I think what we're looking at and what we have to understand is at first we had a president who incited and certainly encouraged his supporters to contest the counting of state-certified electoral ballots. That really is an attack from the executive branch on the legislature. It is very important for the legislature to push back on this encroaching executive and certainly to remand this president publicly and for all of history. It is the case that an impeachment article has been written up, and it appears, go for a vote tomorrow. That unanimous consent agreement the resolution that would require unanimous consent about the 25th Amendment is likely to fail, as you mentioned in your report. And then what we have after the House impeaches a president, if it passes with a majority vote, which by all appearances it will do, then it will go to the Senate and there will be a Senate trial. There will be House managers appointed who will essentially act as the prosecutors. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would preside over this Senate trial, and there would be a defense mounted from the president. But I do think that what is important is that the Republicans have said that impeachment will be a conscience vote. And what that means is that there is going to be no partisan whipping on this. So we are not sure how bipartisan this effort may be in the House, or whether or not even by the time it gets to the Senate, there may be calls for a conviction.
And what would the timeline be like on something like that? There aren't many days left if the goal of impeachment is to remove the president from office.
Well, that's right, except that, Senate Minority Leader, soon to be Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, has floated today that there is a rule that was put in place in 2004 that would allow the Senate to come back into session if both he and Mitch McConnell actually agree, that they would not need a unanimous consent agreement from all of the senators. So we are sort of uncertain as to the timing. Senator McConnell has said it would not happen until the Senate comes back into session. And the first time that they could essentially receive the article from the House would be January 19th, which means the trial would not take place until after the inaugural. But Chuck Schumer is pushing back and saying, you know, I think there is a rule that McConnell and I could jointly agree to together to get this trial underway. So there is a lot in flux, and I would argue that much will depend on the Republican response to what the president is saying in Texas, how defiant he appears, and kind of the continuing politics of the situation.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Vice President Mike Pence and all of this. He would be a key in the 25th Amendment effort to remove the president. But he was also there in Congress presiding over the counting of the electoral ballots. The mob that had just gotten done listening to the president, some of them at one of the entrances were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." One of the lawyers who's filed lawsuits in favor of the president said Mike Pence should be first to be shot, basically. Talk about the position this puts Vice President Pence in.
Well, I mean, we are in a position where Vice President Mike Pence, first of all, it's important to realize that he was elected separately. So even though he and President Trump ran on a ticket together in 2016, the Electoral College, when the electors cast their ballots, they cast separate votes. That was put into force by the 12th Amendment to the Constitution. And so President Trump is not in any kind of position to fire Mike Pence. But at the same time, I think Vice President Mike Pence has made very clear that however angry he may be with the president, he is interested in the president serving out his term. And I think Pence is looking for his political future to be aligned with President Trump.
Talking to Laura Brown from George Washington University, political scientist there, looking at the latest on moves toward impeachment. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Cheryl is with us in Conover. Cheryl, hi.
Hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I sort of take issue with people saying that it's the Democrats that are accusing the president of this insurrection. It's not just Democrats. It should be the entire society of America. It's wrong to portray it as just being Democrats. And I've heard some various and sundry people saying it's the Democrats that call it an insurrection. There are independents, there are Republicans, and there are regular people who don't identify with a party that feel that this is definitely against our democracy.
Cheryl, thanks for the call. And in my intro, I did say Democrats saying that the president were saying that the president's words amounted to inciting insurrection. You are correct. And I tried to briefly do that. We played a clip from former Governor Chris Christie, Republican, longtime supporter of the president, who said, yes, this was incitement from the president. Laura, how much do you see concern about the president and his involvement with this transcending partisan difference?
Well, I do think it is transcending partisan difference. And I agree with your caller. At the end of the day, we saw a mob of angry Americans deciding that the legislative branch and the constitutional process by which we formalize the results of our election was somehow invalid, and that there was a desire to prevent that process from going forward. And I do think that your caller is right. Every American should look at not only what happened on January 6th with those who stormed and assaulted the Capitol, but we should not forget that the president was also caught in a telephone call where he was trying to engage in undue influence with the Georgia Secretary of State looking to overturn that election. We are in a place where all Americans who care about our constitutional process, our democratic institutions, and really the legitimacy of our elections should be banding together and saying, this is about ensuring that our country moves forward and that a cult of personality or a party allegiance are really irrelevant to the process of politics that all Americans admire and support.
Let's go to Evan in Lone Rock now. Evan, hi.
Yeah, I wondered if the guest would agree with me, as I'm a member of alternative media and I'm not a conservative, but many of my colleagues in alternative media who are conservative feel that they have been grossly discriminated against for their political viewpoint, and so many of their lives have been completely ruined as they've been censored and deplatformed. And when we saw the crowds in Washington destroying media equipment, I think is that maybe a sign that people in the conservative alternative media who've been persecuted, deplatformed, censored by big tech, which now feels it can even censor the president of the United States, who I despise, by the way, but I despise big tech more. And I'm furious myself, even though I'm still on YouTube, barely, but all my conservative colleagues have been banned, and they are just, they've lost their livelihoods, and they are furious. And I think this is a big reason for the kind of anger that we saw in Washington.
Evan, thanks for that call. Laura, go ahead.
Well, I think this is a really interesting conversation and a complex one. Let me just say that, first of all, there is no free speech right to essentially engage in either hate speech or speech that promotes violence. We even know that dangerous speech, right, saying fire inside of a movie theater that is packed, is not permitted. And it is also true that these platforms are private companies, so they can regulate their terms of service. This is not a, if you will, squelching of personal opinion. That being said, I also think it's very important for there to be a pluralist exchange. But pluralism and a competition for ideas has to operate with some level of truth and trust. And we are in a place right now where I get emails from conservatives saying that every single thing the Washington Post has written is clearly wrong and I should just believe the opposite. So that is false. I mean, one of the things that has been promoted in conservative and alternative media is that the mainstream media's news organizations are factually incorrect. And that is not true. And I do think that we have to realize that misinformation, disinformation, grifting, and sort of promoting conspiracies for the purposes of one's own self-interest or personal enrichment is not something that should be promoted by any platform. We did and used to have much higher standards for our media when there were many fewer alternatives for people to turn to for information. So it is no surprise that some of these companies are now starting to realize that they have kind of created a monster by allowing everybody and anyone to become an influencer. And this is not about squelching democratic conversation. It is about preventing the lies and the misinformation and the intentional disinformation that has been put out there. Quickly, let me just say that in some ways, I would argue that were President Trump still on Twitter, it is likely that an impeachment and removal effort would move more quickly than it might. In other words, I think that President Trump is his own worst enemy. And I think that in some ways, Twitter may have helped the president prevent him from being removed from office, because I do not believe he would have had the restraint to stay quiet.
We're looking at the effort to impeach President Trump. Laura Brown is with us, director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You can join in with your thoughts, reactions, and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Lara Brown, associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University, looking at the latest on the effort to impeach President Trump. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen in Congress? 800-642-1234 is the number. Back to your calls now. Dr. Amara is with us in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm a first-generation Pakistani-American, been here for 3 decades, and I just want to tell my fellow Americans who are not from my part of the world, we saw this exact thing happen in 1971 when Bhutto lost the election in half of the country, and he said that he will not accept the results of the election. He will not concede the result to the other guy who clearly won the majority. That led to division of the country. Pakistan was divided into East Pakistan and West Pakistan. And West Pakistan, that was led by Bhutto, went through a decline and fall that continues to this date. And the East Pakistan continued to prosper. This person, if it, he is not impeached, not surgically excised from our society, not ostracized, will do the same to my American country as well. He will divide the country. He will rule over our the part of the country that will go through decline, and this person will not care because Bhutto never cared for the country that he led. He destroyed that country where he was lived, and eventually...
Thanks a lot for the call. I want to bring Lara back in on this lesson there. Our caller says from Pakistan, in this case, are people trying to draw lessons and maybe raise warnings that we've seen elsewhere in the world, Lara?
Well, yes. Other scholars who are comparativists who study other countries, who look at different democratic systems, certainly they have sort of raised warnings for all of us who have studied American politics. I do want to, though, just reassure your listeners that America, interestingly enough, has in many times fought back and sort of gone against any of these kinds of movements, even when initially they seemed to be very popular. So, of course, we had the Civil War, which was devastating and painful. But we can look at other times when we have seen essentially a faction of a party or a personal individual depart from kind of the mainstream. And eventually, even if they start with some level of popularity, they become ostracized and seen as following what might be thought of as an un-American idea. So we can take a look at Senator Strom Thurmond, who was upset about the Democrats, integrating the army in 1948. And he formed the Dixiecrat Party that was in favor of segregation. He was eventually ostracized. We can think about Joseph McCarthy, who tried to create some sort of commission to identify those who were un-American or engaged in communist activities. He had his moment in the sun, but he also fell by the wayside. And while we have not seen a president really act in this sort of un-American manner, I do think that we will see that once President Trump is out of office, he will lose the allure that he carries now for many Americans who realize that he has been not telling the truth to them.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Sarah with us in Zion. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Deep breath. Okay, not only do I support Trump being impeached again, but I think that there needs to be action regarding Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley for continuing to support the idea that the election was stolen even after the Cap insurrection attempt. And then there's that representative from Colorado, Lauren Boebert, who tweeted that Nancy Pelosi had been removed from the chambers while it was happening. And she should be, the FBI should be looking into that.
Thanks for the call. Lara, there has been some talk of censure or attempts to remove particular members of Congress for their roles in this. Is this what would it take to do something like that?
Well, so the 14th Amendment does have a provision in there that essentially allows the Congress to say that we are essentially charging these individuals with some level of sedition and looking for them to be expelled from Congress. There were 14 individuals in the past who were charged with supporting the Confederacy during the Civil War. And in those cases, the Senate considered expulsion, but you know, they did send them out of Congress. But I think it is important to realize that you are, when you are doing that, you are overturning those constituents' votes. So expulsion is something that is usually reserved for only the most severe circumstances. I would not be surprised if we saw censure resolutions for those members who were the most egregious in kind of denying the Electoral College vote counting, or who were engaged in kind of the organization and rallying of those troops. And I say troops because I do think the mob was something of a militia or a citizen army. And I think it's also important, though, to realize that these members of Congress, senators and representatives, will have to face their constituents. And many of their local newspapers have already called for their resignations. So I don't envision that we're going to see expulsion movements, but we may well see resignation movements and censure resolutions.
Thanks for that call. And Laura, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Laura Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at the George Washington University. She talked to us today about the latest on the effort to impeach President Trump and what happens next. Coming up, a foreign policy expert tells us the raid on the Capitol could damage U.S. foreign relations and hurt efforts to promote representative government in other countries. Find out why he says we need a democracy summit here in the U.S. and soon. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will deliver the annual State of the State address tonight at 7. You can hear live coverage here on WPR. The address will be delivered virtually as the coronavirus pandemic continues. It'll be followed by the Republican response from State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. It's live coverage of the State of the State address tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now, after last week's Capitol breach, President-elect Joe Biden is communicating even more that he plans to bring America back when he takes office. He also has plans to host a global summit for democracy. But our next guest says before turning his eye to the global audience, Biden should consider a domestic version instead, bringing together bipartisan national and local leaders to restore democracy and trust in representative government in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What will it take to renew support for representative government here in the United States? Do you think things are too far gone to bring people back together at this point? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bruce Gentleson is William Preston Few Distinguished Professor of Public Policy at Duke University and a former U.S. State Department official in the Obama and Clinton administrations. Bruce, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
Well, in a piece you co-wrote at Foreign Affairs, you and your colleagues said, as shocking as the events last Wednesday were, in many ways we shouldn't have been surprised. Why not?
Well, I think this was the culmination of so many things. I mean, the notion that the results of the election have been disputed, gosh, for almost 2 months since they were actually demonstrated to be true. We've had a lot of violence. You know, in your neighboring state, Michigan, there was an attempt to kidnap the governor. There'd been other violence, these phone calls to the Secretary of State of Georgia to find votes, and the Secretary of State's a Republican. And frankly, there are reports now that the FBI was warning at least a day before events that they had intercepted communications about this. So for all those reasons, we should be shocked, but not as surprised as we're claiming to be.
Before we get to this idea of a summit to try to restore our representative government and our faith therein, what are you looking at when it comes to global reaction, the events last Wednesday through the world's eyes?
Yeah, there's no question that many of our allies and friends and partners around the world are very happy to see Joe Biden come back in and Donald Trump be leaving. There are some governments that don't feel that way, like Saudi Arabia and Russia, but most of our friends do. But they also realize that it's not so simple. And in fact, some of the reaction, it's really interesting. You know, after 9/11 happened, all of our allies reached out and said, how can we help? NATO even invoked its collective security provision if we needed them to help us. This time we've gotten some sympathy, but we've also gotten statements from European allies, some of our closest allies, saying, you know, the problems you have are yours, but they're also making our problems over here worse. And we're not responsible for their far-right problems. But the notion that what's happening here, rather than helping other democracies, is hurting them, isn't propaganda. It's an honest and a caring statement from our allies. That it is very troublesome, and there are no illusions that just electing Joe Biden will solve the problems of respect for the United States overseas.
Now, you write in that same piece about the idea of a kind of democracy summit to bring together people from different perspectives. What are you looking for?
Yeah, I think if you're going to go overseas and say we're going to convene a summit of democracies around the world, there are two things. One, you have to have some credibility, and it's not that we need to be perfect, but these events are amazing. I mean, you know, the notion of an insurrection is far beyond protests or partisanship. So I think it's really hard to have that credibility. There are also complications in doing it. It sounds good, but like even figuring out who to invite. You know, there's some countries that are kind of on the border. Do you invite Brazil, that technically is a democracy, but has a president that considers himself a tropical Trump? Do you invite Turkey, that has had elections, but they're an ally, but they're, you know, questionable elections? So on top of that, we need to show that we really understand the profundity of our problems to start to deal with them. And we didn't just envision some big meeting in Washington. We'd love to see it happen, you know, in many different ways, you know, in Madison, Wisconsin, and all over the country, to try for people to come together in an honest and patriotic way to say, we're not going to totally agree, but let's at least start to make sure that the fundamentals of our democracy, as in, you know, not using violence to get your way, that we can all agree not to do that.
And how about bringing back faith in the election system? We've had the president, as you said, basically for 2 months since we knew the outcome of the election, attacking the results, some Republicans joining him in that, and then citing polls showing that people believe them when they say that as proof that there's something wrong. How do we get past that?
It's really hard, Rob. You know, I mean, I think people talk about not just the so-called supply side of Fox News and QAnon and, you know, Donald Trump's Twitter. You also have to think about the demand side. Why are people so open to believing things that have no basis? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, that, you know, you'll lose jobs because of climate change policies. We can have a serious debate about that. But these results have been authorized and validated by so many different authorities, not just Democrats. And when people question them, you know, it means there's nothing that can get through. And in fact, as Joe Biden was elected, who wasn't like a radical Democrat, is a regular guy, the kind of guy you'd want to have a beer with, it makes it even harder. And I think President Biden is going to have to demonstrate that, unlike Donald Trump, he's going to be the president of all the people, that as he builds us back better and as he deals with COVID, he's going to be as attentive to red states as he is to blue states. And then maybe people will start to see that maybe what they had, this cocoon that they had them locked themselves in, you know, was problematic and was hurting them in ways that affected their own families.
Talking to Bruce Gentleson from Duke University, looking at a piece he co-wrote at Foreign Affairs saying we need a democracy summit in America to help rebuild faith in our system, our election system, our system of government. I wanted to throw something at you, Bruce, that I'm seeing in the news now. A unclassified statement from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a message to the Joint Force. They say, I'm going to quote from bits of it. They say the riot in Washington, D.C., they use the word riot, was a, quote, direct assault on the U.S. Congress, Capitol building, and our constitutional process. Later, these events were, quote, inconsistent with the rule of law. As service members, we must embody the values and ideals of the nation. We support and defend the Constitution. Any act to disrupt the constitutional process is not only against our traditions, values, and oath, it's against the law. So that's the chair and vice chair of Joint Chiefs, the heads of the Army, Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, Space Force, and National Guard. On one hand, it's nice that they're making that statement. On the other hand, is it kind of scary that they feel the need to make that statement?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I was thinking the same thing, that we're in a position where, you know, the military does not like to get involved in politics. And when I've been in government, I've worked with, you know, many people in the Pentagon and colleagues and friends of many, you know, people, Secretary Mattis I've worked with, who you know, served in Donald Trump's cabinet. And they want to stay out of politics. Some of them have violated that big time, but they fundamentally believe that in civilian control of the military, and the military serves the country, not a party. And for them to feel they had to make that statement, you know, and it took them, what, almost a week to do it, which means they went back and forth, is this really necessary? I know that one Congresswoman, Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan, who had actually served in the Defense Department when everything was going on, she knew General Milley, the Chairman of Chiefs, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and she had his number, and she called him and said, you know, what's going on, you know, and had the direct conversation with him about that. So it speaks to the problems. I respect the military for going as far as they did in that statement. It's probably further than they wanted to, but they feel it's necessary because there are reports that more is coming, that, you know, for the inauguration and before, that groups are, you know, some of the things they're saying is going to even be more violent this time. And we have to try to head that off the best we can.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Ted is with us in Racine. Ted, hi.
Hey, how's it going? I was just wondering, like, as an individual citizen, like, I have buddies who are on both sides of the aisle, right and left, and I feel like we all pretty much want the same stuff. We want our families to be okay. We want to, you know, be able to provide for our kids. We want, you know, to kind of, like, have a good life. And it seems like we all kind of want that same thing, but we're pretty divided as far as politics go. Like, what can we do as individuals to kind of help bring everybody back together?
Interesting, Ted. Yeah, what do you think, Bruce?
That's a great question and a great way to approach it, because it really is about all of us from the local to the national to do this. I think in some respects, to make clear that politicians, whether they're left or right, who will challenge the system violently and won't respect the rules of the game will not get people's support. You know, you're hearing a lot of American companies now that usually give candidates to Marriott Hotels, for example, give money to both parties, saying they will not give support, not to all Republicans, but to those Republicans that they felt, you know, were part of the insurrection. And so I think that differentiation of both parties, people may feel that way about some people on the left, can be a citizen's message. Before you tell me what positions you're taking on issue X or issue Y, tell me that you will respect the rules of the game, whether you win or lose. And tell me that in a way that convinces me that you're being straight with me. I think that's an attitude we all should have.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Bruce Gentleson, Distinguished Professor of Public Policy at Duke University. He co-wrote a piece on foreign affairs called The United States Needs a Democracy Summit at Home. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think needs to be done to restore trust in our democracy over the next year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Bruce Gentleson, Distinguished Professor of Public Policy at Duke University. He co-wrote a piece. It appeared on the Foreign Affairs website. It's called The United States Needs a Democracy Summit at Home. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was reading a couple of pieces by like Representative Steinicke comparing the Wisconsin uprising to the riots in Washington. And I wanted to say that let's remember that in the protest of 2011 that Democratic legislators actually dragged their desks outside to meet with their constituents. They weren't like the Republicans lately, you know, sheltering in the basement, afraid for their lives. I think we each need to reach across the aisle to each other, but we also need to acknowledge that this is not normal behavior.
Thanks for the call, Bruce. I don't know if you want to get into a comparison with our local politics here in Wisconsin, but the ability of people to reach across the aisle, our caller saying one-sided.
Well, you know, what's significant about this, you know, I've sort of been calling it the Battle of the Capitol Building, was, you know, and I know things have happened in Wisconsin and Michigan and other states. You know, I worked for two different senators. One happened to be a Republican, one a Democrat as foreign policy advisor over the years. And, you know, you really got a feeling when you walked through those buildings about how much they reflected, you know, parts of our pride as Americans. And the notion that they penetrated, a mob penetrated these buildings, desecrated them in so many ways, you know, threw police down the stairs. You know, I agree with your call in the sense of how different this is. This is in a total class by itself. And, you know, I don't underestimate what happened in Wisconsin and elsewhere. The sense and they, you know, that they had weapons, they were setting up guillotines, absolutely frightening stuff, that this was of a magnitude that put it in a whole nother area. And I think we're still sorting that out. You know, I sat by the TV Wednesday afternoon and was in shock. And every day we're hearing, even Republicans now, you know, are disowning some members of their own party. And you can say they figure, you know, their own politics or whatever. But, you know, the notion that people supported this and then came back to the floor, and while they finished the business of certifying the vote, you know, Senator Hawley from Missouri and Senator Cruz from Texas still said, kind of, but we were right. You know, we were right, and, you know, nothing really bad happened, so, or nothing too bad happened. And there are going to be more and more people that want to distance themselves from that. And again, you're seeing that within the Republican Party and outside from businesses, from newspapers in these home states calling for them to, you know, to resign from their office. This is the kind of thing that 20 years from now will be in a textbook, singled out amidst everything else.
I want to read a quote from a freshman congressman from Michigan, Republican Peter Meyer. He was talking to Reason magazine. I'm going to quote a little bit here. One of the saddest things is I had colleagues who, when it came time to recognize reality and vote to certify Arizona and Pennsylvania in the Electoral College, they knew in their heart of hearts that they should have voted to certify, but some had legitimate concerns about the safety of their families. They felt that vote would put their families in danger. End quote. That's a scary place. If he is, and would ask a follow-up, he said, yeah, he had heard that from colleagues. That is a scary statement in and of itself, Bruce. Can you react to that?
It is a really scary statement. And again, I know, like, the, you know, the governor's house in Michigan, it may have happened to your governor too, and I apologize if I haven't seen that in the news, you know, have had people outside, or, you know, secretaries of state at the state level, positions we never paid attention to, have had death threats, people's children's, you know, getting death threats on, you know, on their phones or on their Facebook pages. That is really frightening, and I think that congressman is basically saying, I kind of want to do the right thing, and it wasn't even just the politics of appealing to those people. I was afraid of what they're going to do to me and my family. And, you know, deep breath, I do not believe this is going away when Donald Trump goes away, and so we absolutely need, you know, to take a deep breath and come together on the rules of the game and the peacefulness of practices to get our own country in order, you know, let alone before we go overseas and tell everybody, hey, we're the ones that can tell everybody else how to be a good democracy. That was kind of what we were trying to say in that article.
Let's go back to our callers now. Dee Dee is with us in Waukesha. Dee Dee, hello.
Hello. Oh, I'm so glad I got on. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Go for it, Dee Dee.
Okay. You're getting a call from a mildly educated lady who is 70 years old. I was a math science teacher. I've always voted because it's our privilege. I've lived overseas, and I've seen what a port of freedom America is, and I love America. My dad was a World War II vet. My brother was in Vietnam, and he wound up dying for something. So I have voted, I want you to know, both ways. I have voted Democrat and Republican. I think I'm independent. But the people calling now for us to come together peacefully. I think it's pie in the sky. People like me, who have always been pretty calm and pretty nice, I'm absolutely fed up with Washington. I don't care if it gets really bad and violent there. But let me tell you, I don't even like violence. But what I'm saying is this. The people who are in control now of our House and Senate and the presidency don't care very much about us, common man, and our vote. And I can prove that because all for 4 years while President Trump was in there, and I don't care if you like Trump or not, nobody deserves to constantly be belittled and said such nasty things about, and they couldn't prove one thing against him.
But gotcha, Dee Dee. You gave us a lot to work with there. Thanks for calling in. Bruce, first of a couple points there. First, Dee Dee, I think a lot of people across the spectrum have always felt in governments but feel now like the government doesn't represent them in some way.
Yeah, I know that, and I respect Dee Dee's view, and it's the kind of, you know, I would love to be able to find some common ground there, but there is a fundamental difference. I mean, you know, the things that Donald Trump has been criticized for have been abuses of power that if Barack Obama had done one of those compared to Donald Trump doing dozens, people would have been even more critical of him than they've been of Trump. I think that, you know, we need a government that functions in Washington. We can disagree with this policy or that. I don't share the view. I think that, you know, that many in the House and the Senate have been trying to get aid out. You know, they wanted to give a $2,000 check to people for COVID, and it was the President Trump that stopped it in its tracks. So I'm not into a pox on both houses. I think there's a difference. Democrats aren't angels, but they haven't turned to violence and overthrowing the system the way that the president and other Republicans have really encouraged and fomented that.
Thanks a lot for calling in. In our last couple of minutes, Bruce, there have been calls from some Republicans to not impeach the president. We are seeing some House members say they will vote. Republican House members say they will vote for impeachment. Some calls say, hey, no, don't do impeachment now, this close to the end. That would be even more divisive than we already are divided. What's your read on that? Is it worth pursuing something like impeachment or try to get the president to resign or whatever?
Yeah, I actually believe that the pressure would be most valuable to the country if he was pressured to resign. You even have Republicans now coming out. You know, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, a conservative, has come out and said she would vote to impeach President Trump. There was a report earlier today that Mitch McConnell didn't say he would vote, but thinks he should be impeached. Accountability is the issue here, and it's not just about impeachment, but those who are involved in this, including the people that desecrated the Capitol and threatened violence and all the other laws that they broke, we need to establish accountability, because if we don't, these people will think, oh, look at everything we did. We invaded the Capitol, and they just barely slapped our wrists. So, you know, like everything else in life, you know, there need to be consequences for things that break the rules, that break the law, that endanger other people, and in this case, endanger, you know, 200 years of tradition in our country.
Very briefly, Bruce, what are you watching for in the next few days?
I'm watching for this next round of violence and whether security gets serious enough to head it off, including arrests of those people organizing it. I think to me that's the most important thing, because it could be worse, and if it happens a second time, that means it didn't happen just once, it happened twice. So that's what I'm paying attention to mostly, amidst a lot of other things.
Bruce, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I appreciate it. And go Packers.
Yeah, definitely. Bruce Gentleson is a distinguished professor of public policy at Duke University, former U.S. State Department official. We've got the recent piece that was the prompt for this discussion. It appeared on Foreign Affairs. It is linked at WPR.org/Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show tomorrow at 7. New test kits could open the door to COVID screening in the comfort of your own home. Find out about the latest technology. That's tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show. Up next, we've got special coverage from NPR of the latest from Congress as they move closer to a vote, likely tomorrow, on the impeachment of President Trump. Analysis and live coverage of events as they happen. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time.